Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
There we go. We continue our show. The Chinese society has undergone tremendous changes over a few decades. Arrangements that may have seemed a matter of course are no longer taken for granted, including, for instance, the practice of husbands handing over every penny they earn to their trusty wives. Hello, I'm Lai Ming, and this is Roundtable. In this part of our discussion, Neil Holling and Brandon Yates will debate a financial arrangement that has become more and more popular in Chinese families, the 50-50 split, or as Brandon calls it, the Dutch couples or the Dutch family.
Right.
So what was the... this certainly is my term, the 50-50 couple. What does it mean?
Well, actually, I think you've made a good point by calling it a 50-50 couple, because the gist of this way of living together is that we split the bill, the family bill, and then we each pay for the things that we want as an individual. So the idea is that, for example, well, there are actually different ways to practice it. We have a relatively good example that I have here and one that I will criticize a bit later. Let's talk about the good example first.
Sure.
The good example is that everyone would spend their own money and then writing down, keeping a record of the money they've spent for each and every, well, sometimes for the individual, but sometimes for the family. Let's say you pay for a food delivery today and you write it down on your little notebook. And at the end of the month, they will each take a look at the notes they have and split the family bill. So that's one way of doing it.
That's very complicated.
It's very complicated.
Sounds like a great opportunity to falsify some documents as well. I would just write down that I'd spent less than I'd actually spent. That's what I would do if I was in that situation.
You know how painful it gets?
That's why I'm single.
Yeah, you know how painful it gets
when Americans
hit the tax season.
The reason I find this relatively complicated method a good example is because there is also the bad one. The bad one is each pay for their own expenses without letting the other party know about their actual income. Also, without talking to each other about the money they actually spend for the family. This would lead to a problem that the one that's more devoted to the family, that's actually spending more time purchasing for the family or taking care of the family, actually spending more. And that is the situation for Ms. Wang that we are about to mention quite sometimes in the discussion today, because the topic surrounding the 50-50 couple is quite popular among Chinese citizens because of the story of Ms. Wang, because Ms. Wang complained that she only earns about 5K, 6K monthly, while her husband earns more than 10K.
Mr. Wang, come on now.
And the couple does not also split the family chore or family responsibility quite equally, because the husband is not in the same city as frequent as possible. And that kind of 50-50 marriage or 50-50 couple, in my opinion, is a bad one.
Sounds like Mr. Wang needs to stand up a little bit more and contribute a little bit more in that situation.
This is controversial in the sense that this goes against the tradition in this country, and that is before, well, women had the chance to receive better education and get competitive jobs in the jobs market, then back in the days, we commonly believe that it's men
who should be paying the bill.
So that could potentially throw a few spanners in the works in terms of developing this strategy, is that you need to, a lot of people will be reliant on what is traditional and may struggle to kind of go along with what, younger generations are facing.
Yeah, the reason we are looking at more and more couples prone to having the family financial arrangements in this way is because more and more female, especially in the relationship, started to be able to afford their own expenses.
Like I said, I think it was on our discussion last week, I just noticed around Xi Jingshan, every time I saw a fancy sports car, I would look into the window and there would be some like 25, 26 year old woman driving the sports car. And I saw that way more than any men in the sports cars. And I thought, geez, women are getting it right in Xi Jingshan. I don't know what's going on here.
You should go out to Xi Jingshan and see what's happening in Beijing and around the world. And in China,
exactly.
At least across China. So that is the thing. I mean, women are getting more empowered. They have more opportunities to pay for their own bills. That is a change. And the other is technology, I think. Honestly, given the prevalence of a mobile payment, we each will have to run our own account in order to know, you know, there's no possibility of, oh, couples pouring their resources into one account and pay for everything. I mean, that is possible, but then again, it's not easy to keep track of what you're spending.
Yes. Even if it is one account, you still kind of naturally have to track each other's spending because you would have to use two separate mobile payment sources, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the reason that I find this topic quite interesting is particularly because my feeling is that when you decide to marry each other, you can trust your life to each other. And in that case, I feel like you do not need to split the account. To be honest, I think the situation, the financial status in my family is definitely just a mess, because I would sometimes send money to my husband, he would sometimes do the same thing, and we pay our mortgage together, but we do not keep a track on who's paying which month, and we pay for family.
But you do check that the monthly bills are paid.
Yes, yes, we make sure of that.
The most important things are covered, yeah.
Yeah, but gradually when I study this topic, I realize my financial status or my way of dealing with my money is quite immature. So please don't follow my example.
Well, first of all, congratulations on marrying the right man you would like to marry, because you know there are people out there who are getting married for various reasons.
Oh, yes. And I think it becomes, just in these scenarios, it sounds like, in a traditional sense, I think it makes sense to try and be more organized in terms of, it's not necessarily a trusting thing. I think it's literally just an admin thing where you need to kind of maybe as a standard couple get together once a month and determine who's been spending what, and also maybe creating a schedule on who needs to pay for certain amenities and monthly payments like the mortgage just on a regular basis, and kind of keep track of that. Maybe that can create less confusion.
No, I think it's really confusing.
Yeah, it sounds like. But I think that might be due to a lack of having a schedule of who pays what on a certain month or at the end of a month or week or whatever it may be.
That sounds like a week's conversation to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, who gets to pay what and what a percentage?
And this is assuming there's a combined account as well.
Right.
One bad example I can provide is that never having the talk about how to deal with each other's money. Again, that's my personal example. We've never talked about it. And if you don't talk about it the moment you get married, you don't really have a chance to talk about it anymore. So maybe one way of dealing with money issue, especially if one party earns significantly more than the other, is to have the conversation in advance, because people have different view when it comes to spending, when it comes to whether or not your purchase worth the amount of money you spend. For someone who enjoys jewelry quite so much, their monthly spending on jewelry could be 10 grand, 20 grand, or even 50 grand if they're super wealthy. But that is unacceptable to me personally. So it could be unacceptable for some husbands out there. And it's also possible that for those who are playing video games quite so much, yes, I'm talking to you boys, you are going to consider the purchasing of certain equipment, gadgets, quite so important. Yet, even though it's not a family expense, you still need to discuss that huge amount of expense with your significant other.
But I think that's the key, is communication. I think getting together and discussing each other's financial situations and what your priorities are and what you think needs to be the priority in terms of what you spend the bulk of your money on a monthly basis. And you can identify, like you said, you know, I like jewelry or I like video games, etc. So I think getting together as a couple, married or not, to have a financial discussion, I think is definitely a great start to, you know, kind of managing these sorts of scenarios.
When I say this is relatively new and controversial in our culture, I mean, well, I explain it because given our tradition and given our past, and this is relatively new. But then I also realize that this may not be a controversial topic in a different culture.
Yeah.
It seems to me that in this English-speaking world, at least, the practice of splitting the bills is quite common, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think, for example, in South Africa, there's differing thoughts on this. Obviously, there is, you know, the kind of feminist, more progressive ideology that whether you're married or not and you're in a dating situation, that I want to cover my expenses and I don't need a man to pay for me. And there's that kind of side of the discussion. There's also the more traditional side of things where when a man and a woman or whoever are in the early stages of dating, that generally the man will pick up the bill and, you know, pay for certain gifts and that kind of thing. And that might change once they get married, and then it becomes a more level playing field in terms of sharing expenses. And that also differs in terms of the financial situation of each party. So, for example, you might have both the man and the woman working, but, you know, the woman earns a lot more than the man, or vice versa. Or you might have a more traditional family setting where the man goes out to provide and the woman, you know, stays at home and doesn't work. So then in those scenarios, you know, the man probably pays for like 99% of everything. So there's different scenarios, but I don't think that in a lot of English-speaking countries, there's still the notion that regardless of someone's financial situation, the man is still expected to pay for everything. I think that is less of a concern, like you said, in English-speaking countries as opposed to China, potentially.
Mm-hmm. What are the factors at play when people discuss this financial arrangement, whether or not to split the bills, or at what percentage or at what ratio are they splitting the bills? Here in this country, I think in the past, before women were empowered to this extent, there's the sense of security. I mean, women would like to, you know, lay their hands on the earnings of the entire family just to feel secure, because other than that, they don't have any regular income to begin with.
Oh, now we have a different concern. Actually, we're thinking if we are using men's money, then we're not independent enough.
Exactly.
If we're not using their money, well, if I cannot even trust them with my financial situation, what can I trust him with? I mean, the reason we get together is to rely on each other, to live together as a unit, as a whole. So yeah, we have different problems now.
But do you see how communication is so important? Because there's so many different factors to consider when determining, you know, the financial situation in any sort of couple. There's so
yeah.
many. I mean, I think we've together already raised at least 10 different factors that might determine why there might be an equal split in terms of
right.
payment, or why a man or a woman might pay more. So communication is probably the first step in individual couples figuring out what works best for them.
Yes, and even we say it's hard to generalize and cultural background is not everything, I still want to ask this question. Brendan, you can answer as an individual or on behalf of someone with an English-speaking background. That is, for different people, people have different beliefs in this question, but do you think the financial situation in a family also has something to do with a family power or power play or family politics a little bit? If someone is earning more than their significant mm-hmm. other, would he or she has more saying in the family?
That's a tricky one, because I think in terms of just general spending, I think on, you know, treating each other or going out for meals and, you know, that kind of thing, I think generally it is expected that the person that earns way more money than the other in a relationship would generally pick up the bills in those situations. But that's an interesting dynamic when you bring up the power scenario in a couple. Mm. You know, just because the man or the woman earns more money, do they then have more of a say in terms of how that money is spent on the entire family dynamics? I think that is an interesting one. Unfortunately, I think there are many situations where the more financially powerful person in those family scenarios has a lot more say than the other. But I think in an ideal situation, a married couple, and if one of them is a lot more financially powerful than the other, I think there should be a power splitting or sharing scenario where the person that's more heavily involved in the ongoing running of the family on a day-to-day basis, which I think in that scenario could potentially be a stay-at-home wife, she should have potentially more of a say in terms of how that money is spent on the family dynamic, because she is more hands-on in those situations as opposed to the man that's probably working, you know, 50, 60 hours a week or whatever it may be. So I think that also, again, it comes down to communication. And you would have to hope that just because one or the other is in a much more powerful financial situation, they don't then see that as a way to lessen the significance of their partner just because they are in a less financially stable position. It doesn't mean that they are less important in the family dynamic or should have less of a say in how that family structure is run.
So basically you're saying is, instead of deciding on which one is more powerful in the family by the contribution, the financial contribution, it should be real contribution.
It almost never is determined by the kind of income that one
brings to the family.
Power works in mysterious ways. For instance, if you bring money to a realtor and talk to her or him about the potential or your intention to buy an apartment, but in this case information weighs a lot more than money. I mean, the realtor certainly would like to earn your money, but without the information that he or she can provide you, the person with the money certainly is powerless in this sense.
And also here in China, the young generation, the young couples talking about using this way to run their family actually is also going to different directions. Some of them are very, very extreme. They talk about getting married without any sort of financial exchange to each other's family and no wedding ceremonies being held. They want to pay for the family or the, let's say, the house they own together, the mortgage of that house, 1 month each. And also they want to have two kids, one following the surname of the dad, one following the surname of the mom. They want it to be, again, like I said, very extreme.
Yeah, that
50-50.
Is extreme. Yeah.
But people still talking about the fact that, well, as a man, you can't really give birth to a kid. So there's no 50-50 actually existing in any, even the most extreme scenario.
It's so tricky because you also need to determine what is power. So some people view, you know, in a family situation, the fact that, you know, let's say in a traditional sense, the man goes out and works and earns the money and the mother stays at home to look after the kids. You know, she might view her power over the family dynamic as being equally important as the financial providing that the husband provides.
She should.
So exactly. So that's the thing. I think it needs to be a discussion because people might have differing ideas of what power entails and also what is viewed as more important, whether it be the day-to-day looking after the family or the financial situation. So it's very complicated, and I don't necessarily think that the answer is just splitting things 50-50. I think it's having discussions about what each party brings to the table and managing that as best as possible. But it is, you know, we've brought up so many different scenarios, and as you can see, it can be very complicated because I was very certain about my ideas before I sat down to have this conversation, but now I'm totally confused, to be honest.
Now, to further our listeners more, one last question before we move on. Let's say a girl listens to our show and gets an epiphany or revelation that maybe she's been confused with the messy financial arrangement within the household and that she would like to change things a bit. I mean, should couples ever talk about this financial arrangement? And if so, when is the best time to do this? And if couples are already married and in absence of that discussion, should they start this all over again?
It's so tricky. I think the earlier that you have that discussion, the better, because you might be going into a marriage not knowing what value you place on what you bring to that marriage, because the man in that scenario might think, well, I'm the only one that matters because I financially provide for myself and my family, whereas the woman might think, well, I'm, you know, the primary caregiver, I've given birth to these children, so my value means more to this family than his. So I think, again, communication is the key in terms of any of these scenarios that we've discussed, because You really need to have a mutual understanding as a couple and as a family of what you bring to the table, and that value needs to be placed on whatever that is.
And if you are happily married, you're in a healthy relationship, and you've already missed the window of talking about the situation at the very beginning of your marriage, actually now can also be a good time. You can bring about the situation, have an open conversation. Or maybe if you find it a little bit too awkward, wait for your next major payment. That would be a good excuse to start the big conversation about your marriage.
You're listening to Roundtable. I'll move on straight to Motivational Monday of the week.
Motivational Monday. Mondays.
Welcome back. Brandon, you mentioned you have a Motivational Monday quote for us.
Yeah, of course, being the sports nut, sports guru over here, I've got a quote from one of the most iconic sportsmen of all time, Mr. Muhammad Ali. And he famously said, "You don't lose if you get knocked down, you lose if you stay down." So the message there is that, look, in life, you can get knocked back many times. You can, you know, have many failures and you can suffer many setbacks. But having the ability to bounce back and keep trying and persevering, that is something that you can take from past failures that can make you a stronger person and potentially even lead to great success. Because, for example, Muhammad Ali was known as a boxer that suffered many hits. And in most of his fights, he did famously win most of his fights and he was this iconic fighter. But many people don't know that in those fights he suffered some brutal hits, and a lot of his style revolved around his ability to take hits and then fight back once his opponent became tired. So perseverance and never giving up is the message there that he's trying to give to the world.
And if you have a really hard day, you can lay down there for 5 minutes and rest. And
not in boxing. In boxing you've got 10 seconds.
Oh, that's true.
I see. My quote this week is from the Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw. And he was a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature, and he's known for writing The Pygmalion, The Pygmalion Effect.
Very famous man,
right?
Yeah.
And he said, "The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place." So when we talk about the splitting and 50-50 couples, I think one thing that came up repeatedly is the keyword communication.
Yep.
And I think our people often take things for granted. We assume that we talk to people. We assume we've done that. We assume that when we talk to people, they would understand. We assume that when we communicate with people, the other side would take the appropriate action for us and as we wish. And we also assume that the desired action, once taken, would achieve the desired results. But in fact, the action sometimes involved many steps and might involve a lot of communication further on. So never take anything for granted when it comes to communication and financial and finances.
That is a really good quote, and I think it works really well for people working in communication industry as well.
Sure.
Sometimes we feel like we have sent out the message, but whether or not it delivers actually makes a great deal of whether or not the communication actually happened.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Niu Ho Ling, what's your motivational quote this week?
Well, actually, my Motivational Monday has something to do with your thinking process. Actually, it's from a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. It introduces the concepts of System 1 and System 2 to explain the dual processes that underline human thinking. Actually, System 1 operates automatically and quickly, according to the book, with little or no effort or no sense of voluntary control. Let's say you learn to ride a bicycle, and then what to do when your bike is in front of a pedestrian. It's under the system of the System 1. You do not really have to think. It's your intuition.
It's your muscle memory.
It's your muscle memory. And if I ask you to give me the answer of 3 by 2, you know it's 6. You do not have to think about it.
It's mental muscle memory.
Exactly. And System 2 involves effortful mental activities that demand concentration and analytical thought. If I ask you to give me the answer of 31 by 44, you need to think about it.
Yeah,
you need to actually do the math.
Write it down. Here.
Yes. And my quote today is, "Mood evidently affects the operation of System 1. When we are uncomfortable and unhappy, we lose touch with our intuition."
Mm-hmm.
That gives us the sense that actually when you need to do some creative thinking, when you need to come up with a good idea, you need to put yourself into a good mood so that your intuition could work, could act in a better way. And if you are utilizing, on the other hand, your system too, actually, it is important to think in a lesser excited and happy and too lighthearted mood.
Yeah, I think another message from that quote is also to try and remain calm when you are in circumstances where you might feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
So that you can perform at your best even though you are in a maybe stressful or uncomfortable environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you watch a message or video message from police or the firefighters, the first thing they will say here in Chinese is 首先不要惊慌. First of all, do not panic.
Do not panic.
If you panic, then you can't really make the right decision. Yeah.
And also, a happy mood loosens the control of system 2 over performance. So that is another message I'd like to send to people out there. So
beware of how your body is behaving under different circumstances and different moods, and just carry on with calm. That's all the time we have for Roundtable today. Thank you for listening. If you haven't heard enough, find us on any podcast platform at Roundtable China. Thank you.